Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, given that this is officially the first weekend of summer, with the summer solstice, of course, starting, I thought we'd read a little essay written by Kelly Callis of Hinsdale, entitled On This Side of Summer. Kelly writes, "Sunlight peeks through the windows early in the morning, now and lasts through dinner. The air smells of freshly mown grass, lilac bushes, sunscreen, and citronella. It's a study in contrast, really, the very air at once relaxing and invigorating. Summer light, summer air, they're different somehow, filled with promise, brilliant with expectation, hazy with contentment. A feeling as tangible as grass underfoot. It's as if a summer breeze brings with its permission to pause, stretch, sigh, then sit back down. I remember as a child I stood on this side of summer and looked into the future as if I were looking out into the ocean. Its expanse was incomprehensible. 3 months of weeks, 12 weeks of days, innumerable days of hours all stretched out in front of me, obscured the school year on the other side, made days of bus stops and homework an insignificant memory, an impossible eventuality. On this side of summer, or even squarely in its depth, each day promised a wonderful surprise, an adventure of laughter and freedom possible only in this unique stretch of time. This is where innocence and mischief intertwined. Days were filled with playing kick the can, eating ice cream, riding bikes, getting gloriously dirty, then falling deeply, contentedly asleep, smelling of Dove soap and baby shampoo. There is no happier exhaustion than that of childhood summer nights." Unfortunately, with time came perspective. That ocean now seems a mere puddle. Responsibilities, errands, obligations are adult realities that do not honor the code of the seasons. I look to make plans and skip ahead pages in my calendar as if the summer has already passed. I ache knowing that the days will slip by so quickly, will drift away like the dandelion puffs my daughter delights in blowing into the cloudless sky. Soon, we will be on the opposite shore of summer. The daylight will wane, the leaves will fall, and we will succumb to the unavoidable routines of autumn. But today, and for these next few fleeting months, I plan to wade into the ocean of summer to make the most of the promise and excitement of each day. As I tiptoe with reverence into the beauty of the season, I plan to watch my children run joyfully into its waves, splashing with abandon, dousing themselves with the freedom that only summer can offer. My timeline is now so different. My duties do not stop. But I know that for a short time, I have permission to pause, give thanks, and then to sit back down on this side of summer. Very interesting essay. Of course, as I said, we're approaching the summer solstice. If today seems to go on, it's not your imagination. It's the longest days of the year, the summer solstice. this celestial event, celebrated for thousands of years by people all over the world, is increasingly observed by naturalists and New Agers, as well as just plain folk who just plain love summertime. The solstice, Latin for sun stand still, heralds the start of summer, which officially begins at 7:26 a.m. in our time zone. The sun rises at 5:16 a.m. and sets at 8:31 at its farthest northern point all year. Noontime shadows will be the shortest of the year. The summer solstice was first marked in ancient times as a kick-off-your-boots holiday in the long summer days of relative ease between the hard labor of planting and harvest. It influenced the placement of pyramids and helped to shape the modern calendar. 5,000 years ago, ancient people placed enormous stones in a circle on an open plain in what is now Wiltshire, England. Today, Stonehenge remains the ultimate solstice party destination. The British government opens the site to the public free of charge for the event. Last year, a crowd of estimated at 21,000 gathered to drum and dance through the night and then watch the rising sun balance on one of the main stones of the mysterious structure. The solstice is about the death and regeneration of nature. King Arthur Pendragon, the British Council of Druids' bearded head battle chieftain, said at last year's celebration. And I think that was also one of the ancestors of King Arthur. But beware. Too much sun, warned Chicago landscaper and Jungian scholar Rinda West. The sun is like the eye of reason, the eye of ego, she explained. It's saved mankind from all kinds of horrible instinctual things, but by the same token, it can take over and rule us. People get all type A and ego-driven. It's nice to remember there's a moon as well, an unconscious, very fertile inner life. So that's a way to spend the day. Started out on the lakefront at Promontory Point by the Adler Planetarium or the Field Museum. And watch the sun come up at 5:16 in March. Sounds like a great idea. Be a great idea. Might be something interesting to do. Have a sun-themed day. Just like the Druids did. They were putting together a Stonehenge. That would be interesting. Special day, of course. Father's Day last week. And we lost a great dad. We lost a great friend of the Moore family. We lost Mr. Bob O'Sullivan, 74 years young, and had a rough time of it the last few months, but was able to leave us peacefully with his family all around, and certainly made a mark on so many people, as is evidenced by the fact that it took 2 hours to get up to see him at the casket because the line was so long. And that's a great tribute to Bob, and certainly a great tribute to his family. In his funeral mass booklet, kind of interesting, I'd like to read a couple poems because they were very touching and certainly reflects him, as if he's talking to us himself. The author's unknown, but this is probably Bob talking. As he says, "I sit in heaven and watch you every day. I try to let you know with signs I never went away. I hear you when you're laughing and watch you as you sleep. I even place my arms around you to calm you as you weep. I see you wish the days away, begging to have me home. So I try to send you signs so you know you're not alone. Don't feel sorry that you have life that was denied to me. Heaven is truly beautiful. Just you wait and see." So, as Bob is telling us, live your life. Laugh again, enjoy yourself, be free. Then I know with every breath you take, you'll be taking one from me. And I'm sure that's how he feels. All his children and grandchildren and great-grandchild Slevin, of course, Jimmy and Bob and Patrick, and the sister that nobody knows. But certainly we'll miss him nonetheless. And a little list of things to remember. entitled Worry Looks Around, Sorry Looks Back, and Faith Looks Up. 10 things to remember, maybe even a little more. There are at least 2 people in this world that you would die for. At least 15 people in this world love you in some way. A smile from you can bring happiness to anyone, even if they don't like you. The only reason anyone would hate you is because maybe they just want to be like you. Every night someone thinks about you before they go to sleep. You mean the world to someone. You are special and unique. Someone you don't know exists loves you. When you make the biggest mistake ever, something good comes of it. When you think the world has turned its back on you, take another look. The greatest honor you can give someone is to listen. Always remember the compliments you received. Forget the rude remarks. Good friends are like stars, not always seen, but you know they're there. When God closes a door, he opens another. Sometimes it's hell in the hallway. That's a good one. I would rather one rose while I'm here than a truckload when I'm gone. And he had a truckload at the funeral parlor, by the way. And happiness keeps you sweet. Trials keep you strong. Sorrow keeps you human. Failures keep you humble. Success keeps you glowing. God keeps you going. And, of course, we want to remember Bob's lovely wife, Judy, who was so brave over these last few months, and certainly with dignity, she greeted everyone at the wake and certainly at the funeral. Eternal rest grant unto you, O Lord. May the perpetual light shine upon him. May his soul, may Bob's soul, and all the souls of the faithful departed, through the mercy of God, rest in peace. Bob O'Sullivan, we're going to miss you, and we're always going to remember you. But thanks for being part of our life along the way. Well, we're going to maybe take a little break, and here's some music from Herb Alpert, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago. Actually, it's been kind of like a month of Herb Alpert's definitive hits. And we're going to play one entitled Route 101. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Herb Alpert, Route 101. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The Cat in the Hat, written in 1957, is the first book featuring the title character. In it, the cat brings a cheerful, exotic, and exuberant form of chaos to a household of two young children, brother and sister, one rainy day while their mother leaves them unattended. Broadway in Chicago and Emerald City Theater are thrilled to announce that The Cat in the Hat will play the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through September 1st. Emerald City Theater's production of The Cat in the Hat, based on the book by Dr. Seuss and adaptation by Katie Mitchell, is the perfect friend for a boring, rainy afternoon. From games and mischief to The Thing One and Thing Two, the cat brings all sorts of trouble to this gray day, but will Sally and her brother be able to explain the mess to Mother? This Dr. Seuss classic leaps onto the stage with chaotic exuberance in this adaptation from the National Theater in London. Best suited for ages 3 to 10. The Cat in the Hat runs about 35 minutes and will be directly followed by a short, interactive session of fun and games with the cat himself. See the show and then play with the world's most famous feline. Audiences are invited to arrive early to take part in the pre-show activity. Broadway in Chicago is excited to continue their partnership with Emerald City Theater. We love bringing families and young audiences to the Broadway Playhouse to enjoy and share theatrical memories together, says Eileen Licario, Vice President of Broadway in Chicago. And on the line with me right now is the award-winning businesswoman who has received her theatrical training from Carnegie Mellon University, Indiana University, and Second City. Karen has produced over 60 productions with Emerald City, of which 24 were world premieres. She currently serves on the Illinois Arts Council Theater Panel, one of the brightest stars in the world children's theater, and the co-founder and executive director of Emerald City Theater Company, now presenting Dr. Seuss, The Cat in the Hat, at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through September 1st. Our good friend, Karen Cardarelli. Karen, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm glad to be here.
Well, haven't talked to you in a while. It's so good to talk with you, and such great success you've had over the last few years.
I know, we have, and you as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, you always, we talked about it the other day, you always had a good product, and now you have Margie Korshak, one of the great publicists in Chicago, with the great people like Amanda Meyer and Alexei, who are handling the account, and now everybody knows that you have a great product, and they come out to see it.
Yes, you know, it's been one of the great things about our partnership with Broadway in Chicago and with Margie Korshak is they've just got this great machine that's already, you know, that already exists that really helps families all over the Chicagoland area know about things, and to they've been lovely about inserting us into that machine, and I have found that we are getting so many more suburbanites and people that are from the tri-state area coming to that location. It's a combination that just seems to be working well for people who wouldn't normally see us.
Well, to your credit, though, Care, you have a great product, and if you didn't have a great product, it'd be hard to market that. But people do want to come out. People want to see it. It's our way, and I know we've spoken before about this, it's our responsibility as adults, as parents, as grandparents, as teachers, to introduce young people to the theater, because that's our future audience that will build upon the legacy of theater, musical and otherwise.
Yeah, our future audience, our future cultural audience. But, you know, I'll say, Kevin, over the years, one of the other things that Emerald City has learned from the educators we work with is that young minds, actually probably all minds, learn best when they're in a state of play. And it's been really exciting to understand that and understand that when families are sitting in the audience and having a good time, they're more open to maybe learn something. And that's been exciting for us to work with as well. You know, the Cat in the Hat, you mentioned after the show is over, the cast comes back out and plays a couple games with the audience and has a little conversation with the audience about the theme of responsibility. And it is really delightful to hear, you know, a little five-year-old voice in the audience explain to the Cat in the Hat what responsibility means and how they interpret that. Mm-hmm. And so that's been exciting for us as a company to explore as well.
Well, I think you dropped that one wall that separates the audience from the stage, and now the people are realize that they're participatory in this whole creative process. It stimulates and engages their intellect and their imagination and their creativity, and that's what theater's all about.
Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, those Second City days, the training center days, really taught me the power of that. That's, you know, kids don't always need permission, you know,
but
us grown-ups do sometimes.
You know, you had a great success with Pinkalicious. I remember somebody was on the show chatting about that. That was another great musical theater that you had at the Broadway Playhouse, and that was great success.
Yeah, that ran for over a year. That was a tremendous, a great story. Also with a fun theme, a learning theme about healthy eating, but just told in such a fun way. I mean, who wouldn't want to eat all the pink cupcakes they can possibly manage? We all want that.
As long as they're gluten free.
Yeah, gluten-free.
And it's a great time to put this on because the tourists are coming in the Chicago area, and this is right in the heart of everything. And to be able to sneak over to the newly renovated Broadway Playhouse, what a great opportunity for them.
Well, and I hope that we're making it easier for families with young children to want to come to that location and hang out maybe a little longer in the downtown Chicago area. There are so many fun things to do with the Lego store and the American Girl Place and the great restaurants. Mighty Nice Grill, all in that Water Tower Place, that I hope that we're making it easier for them to extend their day. And downtown Chicago is a fabulous place to visit.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, of course, one of the classics in American literature, The Cat in the Hat. Ted Geisel was an illustrator, a cartoonist, a writer, a poet. He won an Academy Award. He won a Pulitzer Prize. Interesting story, and did some research on it, where he's sitting there with a friend of his, an editor at Houghton Mifflin, the book publishing company, and they're chatting over dinner, and he was kind of challenged to engage in putting together a book that a child couldn't put down, and with a certain parameter of using so many words that a six-year-old would know and so forth. And he worked hard and long on it and came up with A Cat in the Hat, and then it was all history from there.
Mm-hmm. That is good research, Kevin.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You don't know that kind of stuff. And how many words that were in there, how many words are monosyllabic, how many are two syllables, and the longest words are something and playthings in the book. That's
well,
kind of interesting.
Yeah, you're right. You don't hear much about that. And that was back in a time when children were learning to read with the primers, you know, the
right. Dick and Jane.
Dick and Jane,
right.
Thank you. Yes, and they were not terribly interesting stories, so we're forever grateful, right, that Theodore Geisel came up with these.
And, you know, a very talented man himself. He didn't have any children, but his response was, you have the kids and I'll entertain them. He certainly did that, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we were inspired by his desire to do that and got a donation this year from KPMG. They donated, about 5,000 brand new copies of The Cat in the Hat that we were able to distribute to some Chicago public school students as they came to the show. And the teachers have told us that kids are using that to help learn how to read exactly as intended.
Mm-hmm. How do you come up with the ideas, Karen?
I surround myself with incredibly creative people, Kevin.
Of course.
Ernie Nolan is our producing artistic director and is fantastic at getting a team, a creative team around us. I'll tell you, though, I also have a great board of directors, and we formed a community board, we call it, of parents and teachers and other community leaders that we meet with throughout the year, and we ask them what's hard right now in your family life, what do you need our help with in talking about, or, you know, what's the beloved book in your house right now that would be exciting to bring to the stage. So we get a lot of advice.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those books that are hot books now that people find interesting?
Oh, gosh.
I'll tell you one that comes to mind, and I can't get through it. I can't read the book. I started with my kids when they were little. And that's The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
one
of the most touching books. But every time I read it, I always used to read it to them on New Year's Eve.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and as they grew up and so forth. And to this day, now I try to read it to my grandchildren, but I can't get because it's such a touching book, and I cry every time I'm reading it.
Oh, you get emotional.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's interesting. But that's good for your grandchildren to see that.
Oh, sure.
That you get emotional. you should, how old are your grandchildren?
Well, they're all from, I don't know, they're like 6 months to 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, a very popular book series right now that you could take a look at with them is the Llama Llama book series.
Llama Llama.
Llama Llama,
okay.
Red Pajama, Llama Llama, Mad at Mama, kind of about, you know, essentially a young child, or in this case a young llama, who is having his first experience going to school. And so it's a great way to get children to understand what to expect when they're going to school, as well as being hilarious.
Okay, that's good.
So received permission to do the world premiere adaptation of several of those books, so we're premiering that in the fall at our Apollo
Center. Oh, that's exciting.
So
that's exciting.
The Llama Llama book.
There's another one called Blaze, the Blaze series, and I think this is an older series of books about the West and so forth, and Blaze is the horse, and it's like Fury. Remember Fury? And,
oh, sure.
Yeah, that kind of story about the horse is the friend of the young boy and so forth, and all the adventures they get into. That was a fun one that they read. Mm-hmm. But so you get a lot of input, it's a melting pot of a lot of different ideas from a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah, and you know, what teachers will, you know, want or need or recommend for books, you know, is different than what parents want or need. And so, yeah, I think it's really fun to hear all the different ideas, and I love the idea of getting people maybe who wouldn't normally consider a theater outing to consider it. And I think that a beloved book is one of the ways that, you know, gets them excited to want to try it out.
You spend all your time, of course, administering to putting the Emerald City Theater Company together and so forth, making sure things flow. Do you miss performing yourself?
You know, I don't. I stopped.
Oh, that's simple enough.
I stopped a long time ago. It was a little... believe it or not, a little repetitious for me. I kind of like a change of pace more than that does. But I sure love going and seeing it, and I especially love improvisational theater in Chicago. Some of the greatest out there.
When you go to the theater, what do you enjoy, Karen?
I am very uncomplicated. I enjoy adventure and comedy and, you know, like I said, the improv groups that are around either at Second City, the Neo-Futurists. I really enjoy that kind of entertainment, as well as family theater. I think that some of the most exciting stuff is happening on stage, is happening in family theater.
What has changed since you started Emerald City a few years ago, or what seems like a few years ago, to what you're seeing now and to what you plan on doing and changing to in the future?
I would say that certainly how to market and reach families is very different. You know, it used to be that people would pick up there's a newspaper, a couple publications, print publications, and that was the way to reach families. And so now that, you know, no one really looks at that stuff, so that's different. Me to kind of reach out more on the grassroots level, you know, with people. So that's been different, but I would say also that more and more people want a family theater option, and you see more theaters doing family theater. You know, the Goodman is this summer, you know, doing the premiere of The Jungle Book, and I think that, you know, in general, whether you have a child or not, that kind of theater is becoming more interesting and exciting to people.
And I think it's important, like you say, do you have the opportunity to go out and take your shows to various venues?
We do. We have a small, what we call a tour show, so it's a more compact production than what you would see at our Apollo or Broadway Playhouse location, and it travels to schools and libraries.
You have a theater school yourself, right?
We do. We have a theater school here where, you know, what will often happen is the families will come and see the shows, and the kids get excited, and they want to do it themselves. And so we have classes and camps here, and then we also just opened a third theater, which we call the Little Theater here on Southport, and we'll be launching in the fall a whole new line of theater called Theater for the Very Young for ages 0 to 4.
Really?
Completely different experience.
Oh, I like that. I like that. And, of course, I want to mention to people that not only are you at the Broadway Playhouse, but you're also at the Apollo Theater.
Right, at the Apollo Theater, that's right. This summer, we kind of shut down over the summer, and we're only at Broadway Playhouse, but in October, we'll open up with Llama Llama, as I mentioned, and also a musical production of Rapunzel that's written by the creators and the writers of NBC's Friends.
That's really?
So it's a hysterical adaptation.
You know, it's great to see you doing so well, and it's great to chat with you again. And we need to keep on the radar, so I'm sure that Margie Korzek will make sure we do that and we get the word out to everybody.
Well, I hope so. And, Kevin, I have to just make sure that your listeners all heard our big announcement this week that our holiday show this year at Broadway Playhouse is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
awesome.
A musical version based on that classic animated special. So I hope we'll get to talk about that in the future.
You know, I guarantee you that we will. We'll definitely get on the show and talk about that. The Cat in the Hat is a children's book by Dr. Seuss. It features a tall, mischievous cat wearing a tall red and white striped hat and a red bow tie. With the series of beginner books that the cat inaugurated, Seuss promoted both his name and the cause of elementary literacy in the United States of America. The eponymous cat appears in six of Seuss's rhymed children's books. Founded in 1996, Emerald City is Chicago's largest professional theater devoted entirely to families, now playing to an annual audience of over 100,000. Named Chicago's best theater for children by Where Chicago magazine, Emerald City creates innovative, affordable theater experiences that bring families closer together and inspire children everywhere. All Emerald City productions feature professional directors, actors, writers, and designers focused on delivering a theater experience the entire family can enjoy. Emerald City creates theater experiences that inspire early learners through play. Emerald City Theater imagines a day when participating in the arts will be considered as critical to a child's development as reading, writing, or math. Emerald City Theater performs at the Apollo Theater Center in Lincoln Park and at Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place and the Magnificent Mile. Throughout our history, Emerald City has developed and improved the caliber of plays available for young audiences in the United States and abroad, developing and producing over 24 new works. Broadway in Chicago and Emerald City Theater are thrilled to announce that The Cat in the Hat will play the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through September 1st. And on the line with us right now is the founder of Emerald City Theater, Karen Cattarelli. Karen, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website, you know, is emeraldcitytheater.com. And theater, we spelled the fancy way with the R-E.
The correct way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And tickets for Cat in the Hat can be found at the BroadwayInChicago.com website or at 800-775-2000.
And if people would like to get some information about Emerald City, what number can they do that at?
That would be at 773-529-2690.
A pleasure, kiddo, to talk with you again, and I'm so happy that you're doing so well, and we'll continue to get the word out, and I definitely want to talk about Rudolph, you know that.
Great, thanks. Always a pleasure, Kevin. Thanks,
Karen. Take care, dear.
Right, bye.
Karen Cattarelli, what a great lady, and doing such great things for young people. I really like that idea. Younger kids, 0 to 4 now, are going to have an opportunity to come to the theater and have a little interactive experience, but Karen's been doing this a long time, and nobody does it better, and you know, we're very excited to be able to talk about that and certainly to get the word out, and certainly all summer, the tourists and people in and around Chicago will be able to come down to the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place all the way through September 1st and see Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat. For information, 800-775-2000. Let's jump to another Herb Alpert hit from Bacharach and David, What Now My Love. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Herb Alpert, What Now My Love. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Black Ensemble Theater announces Ain't No Crying the Blues in the memory of Howlin' Wolf, written by Black Ensemble Theater founder and CEO Jackie Taylor, directed by Associate Director Reuben Eccles, and starring Rick Stone, one of the stars of the classic movie Coolie High. Ain't No Crying the Blues will be presented at the new Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center, 4450 North Clark Street in Chicago, through August 11th. Howlin' Wolf was born Chester Arthur Burnett and became one of the greatest and most influential blues singers that ever lived. Wolf was inducted into the Blues Foundation's Hall of Fame in 1980 and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991. His musical influences can be heard in the country singers of the 1950s to the punk blues bands of the 1990s. Wolf was highly known for his dynamic stage energy and presence, from crawling around the stage to climbing up the stage curtains. No performance would be complete without his infamous howl. No one can bring Howlin' Wolf to life better than Rick Stone. Rick, who also played the famous Howlin' Wolf at Black Ensemble in a different script in 2003, is Wolf reincarnated. In bringing Howlin' Wolf back to the stage, there was just one man who could give the role justice, and that's Rick Stone, says Jackie Taylor. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage and screen. Jackie has written and produced more than 100 plays and musical biographies. She has appeared on screen with such greats as Sidney Poitier and Lawrence Fishburne. From Chicago's Cabrini Green, she is a director, producer, actress, singer, playwright, teacher, and mentor. Founder of the nationally and internationally renowned arts institution, Black Theater Ensemble, and now presenting her newest hit musical show, Ain't No Crying the Blues, in memory of Howlin' Wolf, at the Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center, 4450 North Clark, through August 11th, Ms. Jackie Taylor. Jackie, welcome to The Kevin Moore Show.
Well, Kevin, it's a pleasure to be on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and certainly another success for Jackie Taylor at the Black Ensemble Theater. It gets kind of redundant here, Jackie. Everyone is a hit, you know.
Well, you know what? You never get tired of that.
I guess not. But this is exciting. Here's a gentleman who is an American blues singer, guitarist, or harmonica player, known for his electric blues, and so integral. What makes him such an iconic, singular, and pivotal presence in the evolution of blues, especially Chicago blues, Jackie?
Especially Chicago blues.
Yeah.
Because he came in and his style was so unique and so different that it inspired many generations after him who copied, who actually infused some of his style and musical genius into their own groups. You know, people like the Rolling Stones, for instance, were huge fans of Howlin' Wolf, and to today still utilize some of the things that they learned from him and Muddy Waters in their music, which I think is why Howlin' Wolf still rings true today. And another reason why the folks that emulated him and copied him are still able to go strong.
And you got a guy in Rick Stone who is Howlin' Wolf personified.
I think Howlin' Wolf is right there in that theater, and he has transferred his spirit to Rick Stone. That's what I think.
And you saw that. You saw that years ago, and you continue that today.
Absolutely. I don't even know of any other artist who could give justice to Howlin' Wolf the way that Rick Stone does. It's just unbelievable, and it's a little scary.
What was the, and you know this, I'm not familiar with this, what was the fallout of the rift between he and Muddy Waters? What was it, just a competition there? What was it?
You know, that was all promotion.
Was it? Okay.
It was all publicity. Okay. Him and Muddy Waters were very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
They dined together. They went on trips together. But for the public, they kept up this feud because they got a lot of press from it.
Sure, why not?
So why not keep it up? They were blues artists in Chicago, blues legends. So it just made sense.
Sure.
That if people, as long as people were talking, that's what you wanted them to do.
For the people who are going to be looking forward to coming out to see the show, give us a little taste of what it's about.
Well, it definitely explores the life of Howlin' Wolf. And more importantly, it explores his musical genius. His performance
on that stage was like no other performance. And Rick Stone actually crawls on the stage just like Howlin' Wolf did. He does a lot of howling like Howlin' Wolf did. And the women swarm up on the stage, just like they did for Howlin' Wolf.
But down and deep, though, Howlin' Wolf was a religious man. He didn't get caught up in all of that, the pomp and circumstances a lot of the other performers did.
Howlin' Wolf was very different in that he was an astute businessman. Mm-hmm. And he had a wife that also took care of the business and was very astute. And he was able, he didn't fall under the category. This is not a story of, I didn't get my royalties, I didn't get paid my money. Howlin' Wolf got every penny that he deserved. He got all of his royalties. He left his family very, very well off. And it's a success story all the way around.
Not dissimilar to a young Jackie Taylor, who back in 1976 started with the other Cinderella, and look where she's come now. I don't know if you're doing any howling, but I'm sure you're doing some happiness there.
I'm doing some crawling on the stage, too.
It just seems like yesterday when you started doing this.
No, it doesn't. It surely seems like 37 years.
But it was fun all the way, right?
Absolutely.
And now you have a whole big theater, cultural center. And you shouldn't even say theater. It is a cultural center. It's a community destination. It's a citywide destination. People can come and be exposed to all different aspects of the theater.
That's absolutely right. We have a wonderful art gallery where we feature different art in accordance to what the production is about. The community utilizes our space. We have beautiful, beautiful space where we serve the graduations that are in the community. We serve the community groups. They come in and they utilize the space. So it's definitely a cultural center where many different aspects of culture come together.
Had you had this vision all the way through, Jackie, or did it develop as you went on?
No, I didn't have it all the way through. As I developed this vision about, I would say, 13 years ago when I started trying to figure out how to institutionalize the Black Ensemble Theater, so that knowing that I'm not going to find the secret to living forever, I don't want an institution that I have built to go when I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to develop a strategy that would keep Black Ensemble alive. Our mission to eradicate racism is so vitally important and necessary, and it's going to take several generations to blossom and to bloom into what it's supposed to be. And I wanted to make sure that I built a foundation where that would happen. And that's why the Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center came into existence. Now we have a foundation.
Do you see that that's coming sooner rather than later, where people will not even distinguish color? I know when I was young, my parents' generation, of course, was different. But even when we were in high school, whether it was St. Ignatius or any of the high schools in and around the Chicago area, and even my kids who went to attend the same schools and so forth, they didn't see color. We didn't see that. We had friends that were teammates and classmates, and we went to their homes, we associated with them. I see that more now than ever, that people, I don't know if they see color like they did before.
You know, unfortunately, we do still see color. However, times are changing. Change is slow and it's difficult, but it is happening. It is happening. And the more that we do to assure that it continues to grow, one day we will all be colorblind.
Yeah. There's a nice article I saw in the, was it the Sun-Times the other day, when they did a nice interview with you, and you quoted, of course, the great Malcolm X, who said, "We're either part of the problem or we're part of the solution." But what you said I thought was interesting. To be able to help us understand our sameness while respecting and accepting our differences. That goes for everything, not just race.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the essence of being human, of being on the earth. Our basic survival pattern, the things that are our basic everyday lives, what we all do, we can check it all off what we do every day, and it would be the same thing that every human being on the earth does. Of course, we're different. We come from different environments. We come from different circumstances. Of course, we're different. Why are we making issues, having wars over our differences when we need to understand, okay, we are different. Let's accept that, but let's celebrate the uniqueness and the sameness of who we are as human beings.
Historically speaking, of course, you usually put on 5 shows during a period of a year, and you've done Marvin Gaye and Jackie Wilson and certainly the 60s. I remember the great 60s, the 70s, you did the shows. Where do you come up with the ideas?
Well, you know, the audience is a great help in that because they will say, have you ever thought about this?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like that's basically where the ideas come from. Or I might have a title that I like. And for instance, when I did Elvis Presley Was a Black Man,
mm-hmm.
I love that title. So I said, okay, this is controversial. Let's use this title, and I'm going to write a play around this title. So sometimes the title comes first.
And you do classics also. You've done The Streetcar Named Desire. You've done The Glass Menagerie, Julius Caesar, some of the great theater of all time.
Yes, we did do classics. We do not do classics anymore. And the reason that we don't do classics is they don't make money.
Really?
Right.
I would
theater
think that
is a business.
I would think that in a mix of doing contemporary shows, people would like a little different taste of what's happening on the stage.
Well, I found that people I'll use McDonald's as an example.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's is a $1 trillion business and has done very well because they stick to their formula. But they do, you know, they give you a little McRib or they give you a McShake when it's time for, you know, the
right,
McShake.
Right.
They added salad so that the parents, when they come in, can have something. So they're always thinking and they're always inventing. But they have a formula that they stick to. You can always get a McDonald's hamburger.
Right.
Period. And that's my philosophy with Black Ensemble Theater. We went through a transition trying to figure out what would sell.
Mm-hmm.
We found what would sell. We know that people are interested in knowing about people's lives. Music brings people together, people of all colors and kinds. It crosses cultural bridges already, and it speaks to everyone. So we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're going to use that what we know work. And our formula is our biographical, our musicals, and then to be different, we're going to throw in a little McRib or a little every once in a while.
I like a filet of fish myself.
Okay, well, there you go.
Now, what's coming up in the new season? Anything you can talk about?
Well, I can talk about the next show, which is the Curtis Mayfield story.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, it's called It's All Right to Have a Good Time, and it will be all right to have a good time, trust me.
When will that be starting?
That starts September 8th.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're always preparing for the next one.
We're 2 years in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I like to stay 2 years ahead so that we never get into a crunch. And there's always wonderful material. So.
Well, I know Kathy Taylor does a great job, but if there's anything we can do to get the word out, you just let us know because it's always a delight to chat with you.
Well, you know, you're doing us a great justice right now, so we appreciate it.
Just following your lead, Jackie. Founded in 1976 by the phenomenal producer, playwright, and actress Jackie Taylor, Black Ensemble Theater is the only African-American theater located in the culturally, racially, and ethnically diverse Northside Uptown community. Through its 5-play season of excellence, the Black Ensemble Theater dazzles audiences locally, nationally, and internationally with outstanding original musicals that are entertaining, educational, and uplifting. The Black Ensemble Theater has produced more than 100 productions and employed over 5,000 artists. The mission of the Black Ensemble Theater is to eradicate racism and its damaging effects upon our society through the utilization of theater arts. Black Ensemble is the only theater in the nation whose mission is to eradicate racism. Other organizations work to diversify audiences, but none utilize theater to bring races together in a community which embraces similarities and fosters dialogue, understanding, and acceptance. Black Ensemble Theater announces Ain't No Crying the Blues in the memory of Howlin' Wolf, written by Black Ensemble Theater founder and CEO Jackie Taylor, directed by Associate Director Reuben Eccles, and starring Rick Stone, one of the stars of the classic movie Cooley High. Ain't No Crying the Blues will be presented at the new Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center, 4450 North Clark Street in Chicago, through August 11th. And on the line with us right now is Jackie Taylor. Jackie, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information?
Not a problem. It's 773-769-4451. And our web is blackensemble.org.
Always a pleasure, kiddo, to chat with you. And certainly, if there's anything we could do, as I said before, let us know. We'd be happy to do it. And we'll keep getting the word out for you.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jackie.
All righty.
Take care, dear.
Bye-bye.
Jackie Taylor, what a special lady, certainly doing wonderful things with the Black Ensemble Theater and the Black Ensemble Cultural Center. I want to underline that, too, because, as Jackie said, an art gallery and all the cultural stimulation that comes with that, and I think it's just terrific. And she always comes up with such great ideas. And this is Howlin' Wolf. As she said, Curtis Mayfield's coming up. We'll be able to chat with her when that comes around. But just a great place to be, 4450 North Clark through August 11th, Ain't No Crying the Blues in the memory of Howlin' Wolf. And for information, 773-769-4451. Since it's a vacation time, the smartest things ever said about time off, some great authors and writers. Gandhi said, there is more to life than increasing its speed. Writer Robert Jackson said, your job today tells me nothing of your future. Your use of your leisure today tells me just what your tomorrow will be. The philosopher Lin Yutang said, if you can spend a perfectly useless afternoon in a perfectly useless manner, you've finally learned how to live. Josiah Holland said, work is the means of living, but is not living. Goethe said, we must always change, renew, rejuvenate ourselves, otherwise we harden. And Sidney J. Harris, the great writer, Chicago writer, said, the time to relax is when you don't have time for it. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Jackie Taylor, the founder of the Black Theater Ensemble, now presenting her newest hit musical show, Ain't No Crying the Blues, in memory of Howlin' Wolf, at the Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center, 4450 North Clark, through August 11th. For information, 773-769-4451. And, of course, Jackie has another hit on her hands coming up, Curtis Mayfield, and time marches on. And Karen Cardarelli, the founder of Emerald City Theater Company, now presenting Dr. Seuss's The Cat in the Hat at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through September 1st. For information, 800-775-2000. Great way to spend 35 or 40 minutes watching a play and then having the interactive opportunity where the kids can see the Cat in the Hat, talk with him, play with him after the performance. Should be a lot of fun. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, The love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great longest weekend of the summer.
The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then any luck, then I suppose the music, the music.